So Mitch, Elsa said this 4 years ago during COVID. So I don't know if you remember it or not. Jordan? Got it. So Dave is going to take me test. He's testing me, but I'm going to say it right this time. Okay, so we have this expression, we have the mitzvah of Trumas Hadeshen, which Rabbi Wein has a very cute story that his kids were younger, he was trying to convince them that they should take out the garbage. So he said, in the Beis Hamikdash, it was considered a very kosher thing to take out the garbage. So his children, being Rabbi Wein's children, they said to him, Daddy, it's so kosher, we would like you to have that opportunity. So they just... he said over the story with a little bit of pride in his children's ability to come back, have a good comeback. They got it from somewhere. It's an extraordinary concept, the concept of the Trumas Hadeshen, that every day there was a mitzvah that the Kohen would have to wear bidikuhuna, which means it was considered an avodah, had to be dafka Kohen, couldn't be Yisrael. He had to wear the bidikuhuna, which means he's wearing these beautiful garments, to do the process of taking out some of the deshen and putting it next to the mizbeach. There was a separate din called Tzoz HaDeshen, which was that if occasionally, doesn't say how often it took place, that there was a large amount of ash on the mizbeach, they would take that out, and that was not put next to the mizbeach, that was taken out of the mikdash. And where it says, during the time of the Regolim, they actually did not do that. They would civilly leave it there because the ash built more and more that showed the Kleistos relation of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Kleistos brought so many Kabbalahs. As the word says, he had an extraordinary amount on the Mizbeah. The word says it was an exaggeration, but the idea that they would leave it. So Hadassah Hadeshen was not necessary to do all the time. It was when they saw it was necessary. But Trumas Hadeshen was a chiyuv to do every day. And it had to be done by the Kayan at Brahmin de Kuna, which means it was part of the Avodah Hamikdash, was the process of Trumas Hadeshen. You take a small amount of the ash, put it next to the Mizbeach. So the Chavos Lubavos, sorry, look at the piece in the Chavos Lubavos. Chavos Lubavos says, if I got the right piece, this is from a section called Shara Kaniya. Shara Kaniya, the Chavos Lubavos talks about the concept of a nevus. So he talks about many different elements which are expressions of a nevus, and a person should train himself to do these things if a person wants to acquire the Mida of a nevus. So he calls it Shara Kaniya. Now, in the beginning of Shara Kaniya, he says a very important thing. So a person who's not aware of his greatness, that's not Hachnoa. That's fooling himself. Person has to be totally aware of his chashivas, of who he is, his stature, etc. And then take that and lower it down and not be haughty because of that. It's not a lack of awareness of who you are, which is the goal. It's a person is acutely aware of the greatness that they have, where they came from, who they are, etc. And while doing all of that, having humility. So Moshe Rabbeinu is the Adam Mikol Adam. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I should be Moshe Klaus of Meretz Yisrael. I should go up to the Tahar Sinai. I should teach Torah. Why did he teach Torah? I'm a garnish. He didn't say that. He taught Torah. And when he needed to stand against Klai Yisrael by the Chet Egel, he stood against he was ready to take a stand against all of Klai Yisrael. No problem. He knew who he was, but he's still Adam Mikol Adam. Because Anivis is not a lack of awareness. Rabbi Chanan said over about the Chavos Chaim was known to be a tremendous Adam. He says he personally heard from the Chavos Chaim multiple times. The Chavos Chaim said that Chavos Chaim said of himself that he is personally responsible for the whole generation. Chavos Chaim knew who he was, knew the role that he played in Klai Yisrael, that he was the Gadol Hador, that all of Klai Yisrael looked to him for direction. But that didn't make him haughty. So that just meant, okay, now I have more responsibility. So Rashmi, so the next step that a person needs to do is Shiktim Ma'ir of Maseyu, Misraim al Nafshal Ksura Binyani Tarosu Lefnealakim, Lefnebene Odom, Vivakash Melakim Ezer, Va'imitz. So a person has to recognize that you have a lot more to accomplish. Then he says, V'yaniach Hagavus, Lekwer Haburi, V'yazav Gdula, V'yakr, V'eshu, Oysel, Lekim, Yisbar, Ben Levadu, Ben Besuch, Machelus, Bene Odom. So a person has a certain gavus, how he carries himself, a certain, we'll call it haughtiness, but he also said that in a negative sense. There's a certain way your person carries himself with a certain amount of authority and strength, etc. That's when you're doing it l'kvod Hashem Yisbarach. But when it comes himself, he should let go of his gavus. It's beneath my dignity to do such a thing. Aaron, he's a person who's a Navi. He's the first Kohen Gadol. It says, "Behemis Hadeshin." Yechiva is a baruch. The heart says Hadeshin. B'chayyim told me the hashbil lahaser hagabas meliboy. You know, Rabbi Wein says he took out the garbage. You know. You mark of a korban and it's holy, holy, holy. It's the korban's done. Everything's done. It's the leftovers. It's ash. So call a janitor. No. The Kohen Gadol takes out the ash. It was a lesson in humility that nothing's in Avodah Hashem. Nothing's beneath your dignity, and the opposite is that you should learn to not hold yourself. When it comes to Avodas Hashem, everybody tells the stories in the Purim Shpil, but the Bachram, that they had a scene where something was happening, and then they triggered an alarm, and in came the commandos. The commandos was Rabbi Kreiser and Rabbi Reingold, and Rabbi Sher coming in, you know. And Rabbi Kreiser says, they knew this in Baranovich, because he always talks about Baranovich. Reingold says, help us. It says, I don't need to tell the stories to tell you, to save you. Anyway, so Rabbi Meir, I once heard this from Rabbi Gamliel Ginsburg. Rabbi Gamliel Ginsburg was one of the early Talmidim of the Yeshiva. He was a chaver of Rabbi Einar Zatzal. He was a Yeshiva, eventually a Yeshiva in Neri Sol, Toronto. Passed away, I don't know, 20 years ago? Sometime in the last 50 years. I can't keep track. So in 1984, so it was the 20th Yahrzeit for Ramatul Katz. The two founders of the Yeshiva in America were Rabbi Meir Blalock and Ramatul Katz, two brothers-in-law. They had been sent by the Yeshiva to America to fundraise when the Yeshiva was still functioning in Europe, and then the Germans came and killed the Yeshiva, and they were here in America. They started the Yeshiva in America. So Rabbi Meir passed away in 54, and Ramatul passed away in 64. Or end of 63. So it was his Ramatul's 20th Yahrzeit and Rabbi Meir's 30th Yahrzeit. They made his big asifa. They brought in some old Talmidim to speak. So Rabbi Real Ginsburg was speaking, trying to describe what it was like. He says, we were all American boys. We had these two literature Rosh Hashivas trying to teach us what it meant to be a Ben Taro. So one time Rabbi Meir walked by a Bacher. And the Bacher did this, you know. Rabbi Elamayor gave him a kick in the pants, and made him stand up. Rabbi, what's by you? Stand up. So, right? That being said, Rabbi Elamayor would go around the base manager and pick up the trash on the floor. So somebody asked him, Rabbi, he said, I'm not trying, I'm doing it for my own kavod. I'm doing it because I need to train you as Bacher what it means to give kavod to a rabbi. When we saw me, I have a responsibility to make the base medrash look as beautiful as possible. That's not beneath my dignity. There was a Bacher in Yeshiva, it was a major letz. So in those days, Bacher smoked. So there were cigarette butts on the floor. Rabbi was picking up the cigarette butts. So when Bacher said to the rabbi, he said, Rabbi, if you want a cigarette, you can give me a full new one. You don't have to bomb the butts up the floor. Rabbi threw him out of Yeshiva. You know, for a week, whatever it was. You don't talk to a rabbi like that. You know, it's a good line. But you have to learn control of yourself. You know, that's not you. So the Talmud, Nichbodus, etc. But the idea that he should walk around Beis Medrash cleaning up the floor, it wasn't beneath his dignity. That it was both sides. The person has to carry himself with the Kabbalists, understand the Cheshivas and where they are. They have to, as a Rebbe, train the Talmidim. At the same time, they have to say that it's not nothing beneath my dignity if I'm doing it with Kabbalah Hashem. So that's the lesson that the Chavos oversees in the Chumash Adeshim. Kamaz Amr David, Materis Amelach David, Mephazes, Makark, Nathan Hashem. So Michal Bashol sees David Amelach, her husband David, she's married to David, that he's dancing in front of the Oren as bringing the Oren to Ir David, that he's dancing with Kol Karchai, looking at, a little bit like, not Mechubadik. There's a Meisim once in Cleveland. So Baruch Mechas is like, they do shtick. Sometimes more Mechubadik, sometimes less Mechubadik, etc. So I don't remember exactly what was the catalyst. So there was the individual community who, in general, tended to have a jaundiced eye towards the Yeshiva Bachurim. I know from having a few conversations with him. Whatever the Baruch Hashem did was never good. They're not this enough, they're not that enough. It was a constant refrain. So he wrote a letter to the Yeshiva, it's beneath the Baruch Hashem to act like that. That they act. The Baruch Hashem they decided that for the purpose of the Simcha of the Chasna, being a little more loose was appropriate. And he then thought, now, they would have not done any shtick, you would have said the Baruch Hashem is too haughty and won't do shtick. That's part of the guy's problem. Okay, but there's this idea that I'm stuck in my chashivas. Taking it a step, a little bit of a side issue, Revolver writes in a fascinating thing. He says, and nowadays, the idea of Rebbeim and Rabbanim demanding Kabbalah Torah, it doesn't exist anymore. He says, because people think they're demanding their own Kabbalah, not Kabbalah Torah. And the result is Bizoyan Torah. Yeah. That the rabbi, not only, he's such a bad guy, but he thinks he deserves such Kabbalah, They don't say, wow, it's because of Shem's Torah. They think it's because of the... So I had an individual, a Rav called me up, and a certain event had happened where a member of the Kehillah had been very mechutzav to him. So he said, because of Kabbalah Torah, he has to respond. I said, please don't respond. People will think you have a problem, that you can't take it. He said, you'll get more covered by not responding than by responding. But it's Kabbalah Torah, maybe you mean L'shem Shemayim, but it's just telling you it's not Kabbalah Torah. People do not interpret it as Kabbalah Torah. People interpret the rabbi has a Kabbalah problem. And that ends up being a negative result, not a positive result. So just please, I pleaded with him not to respond. I do not know what happened to Lamaisa. I didn't want to hear. I'm not sure I convinced him or not. So he's saying there's another step to it, that the Bereshit gave the mitzvah that B'skiva B'rei L'hoitzi Z'deshin L'hoyam L'hashpil L'hoser Agavos M'libay. I mean, being the Kohen Gadol sounds like a pretty, chashuv position, glaizer. So there's room for a person mistakenly to start thinking very highly of himself. So the Bereshit specifically gave the mitzvah, totally the Tama mitzvah. The Russian gives mitzvahs for many reasons. We have no idea why the Russian gives mitzvahs. The whole idea behind the mitzvah obviously is beyond our full understanding. But there are lessons we can take from mitzvahs. So he's saying that we can look at this mitzvah as a message that a person of such stature needs to simply be forced to lower himself, not to get too full of himself. The Russian gave the mitzvah to remove the gaiva from Aaron's heart. Now, we read through the Chumash and we have no habamina that Aaron's going to look like that. Right? We're talking about Aaron crying. You see how much his idea of lowering himself. He's happy that the Moshe should become the leader instead of him, etc. His younger brother, and Aaron was a Navi. According to Chazal, Aaron was a Navi. And Moshe was didn't want to take the responsibility to be the individual who take Klai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim because he didn't want Aaron's hurt Aaron's feeling. The Torah says, "V'rachov v'sam alibi." He's totally happy that you should be the person instead. So Aaron was a tremendous honor. And even that person, the Torah simply gives, where the Chavos is saying, gives a mitzvah to prevent him from becoming a holy. So the translate that back for us. Right? A person tends to, you know, sometimes like, you know, whatever, to find themselves with certain kashivas for whatever reason that might be. And a person has to remind themselves that no, that's not where it's at. On a practical level, there's a meister once with the regifter, Rashi Regifter, that you remember the girl who came to the gifter that the wife told her husband he should take out the garbage. And he didn't feel it was appropriate that this rabbi should be carrying garbage out in the street. So he came to the gifter. And if it says 100%, Ben Torah carrying garbage in the street, it's not the right thing to do, etc. Next day, there's a knock on the front door, and her gifter is standing there by the door. Shiva says, "I came to take out the garbage for you." And the Shiva took the garbage and took it out. He says, "It's a hostage with you, but I'm okay with it." You know, now, the guy got the message very clearly that he was he's being too full of himself. You know. There's a maestro Rishos Salanter that there was a Sivas Rabbonim, and there was a question like who should speak first, which obviously was a position of tremendous COVID. So one of the elder Rabbonim said, I'm so old already, COVID doesn't mean that much to me anymore. I'll go first. So Salanter said to him, he said, no. Taiva doesn't mean so much to you anymore. The only thing you have left is COVID. So Rishos Salanter sort of put him in his place. That's not the way to go. So people ask me why I ride my bike. So besides the fact that I ride my bike because it's good exercise. It's not standard operating procedure that Rosh Hashanah in America ride bikes. Let's make it very clear. And Eretz Yisrael, forget it. It's just not the gay. Rabbi Walter, when he came here the first time, so he saw me riding my bike. I was going to the mikveh on Woodside. So I rode my bike to Woodside to go to the mikveh. And I ride by his house. He moved since then. And then he was living in Crosby. I rode right by his house. So he looked out, and there's Rabbi Reingold riding a bike. You know, it's like, what is going on? Like, he just came from Eretz Yisrael. So it's not, it's not even within the universe that a person with a Rosh Hashanah should be like degrade himself to the level of riding a bike. Like that's like just like not in this universe. Like you said, So I said, and he says, that's why I ride a bike. Yeah, it's a good thing. I'm a normal human being like everybody else. I'm the big rabbi, normal human being like everybody else, and I ride a bike. So like at the end of the conversation, it's not a bad thing.
Good answer.
What?
Good answer.
Now, it was the line was sure good, what the real COVID come on is. Okay. My Elazar one time asked me when am I going to put on a kapata. He was younger. Because it tells Eretz Yisrael, and B'nai Brak, as soon as you get married, you put on a kapata for Shabbos. And Yerushalayim, if your person is a reshiva, Rosh Karlo, they all wear kapatas, they wear long frocks. And tells all the rebbeim on Shabbos wear a frock, wear long. The Rashivas wear long the whole week. But on Shabbos, everybody wears long. So I told him, I says, when Rainer and Rabbi Blansky put on a long one, I'll do it also. Not really, because I definitely don't want to do that, but I'm saying, but I wasn't too worried about it. Rainer hasn't put it on at that point in time, it's not happening. So I was safe. I said that it's like I imagine in a place you live with that standard it doesn't go to, that becomes like standard so you don't think about it. But if it's not standard, the person is constantly putting a target on himself that I'm somebody special. Right? Why are we going to do that? It's not healthy. Okay.
Is it doing it publicly, or is it the public part that's important?
So there's an interesting question. So there is a Gemara. The Gemara says that a person who's the Ismail Letzir, a person is appointed to a position of responsibility and authority over the Tzibur, is not allowed to do menial labor in front of the Tzibur. Because on their end, they need to look at him as somebody of Cheshivas. So Rabbi Enemer told me, I don't listen 100%, but Rabbi Enemer told me, he says, I shouldn't ride my bike on Arkola. You know, around the side streets is one thing. On Arkola, the main public, you walk your bike, you know. And I can't just leave my bike there. I'm like, you know, that's not good. But, you know, so I grapple with this question, you know, I take out the garbage, you know. I also do work on my roof, yes, you have, So I have my work clothes. I have my black jeans with my work suspenders and my old worn out white shirt that I wear. I looked at the Chassidish worker on the roof, like. So somebody asked me, like, you know, is it appropriate? I said, I live in Kenbrook. Down in Kenbrook. Who's supposed to see me? Who's see me anyway? Like, oh, yeah. If I live in the North Belgrade, I would have be more. I mean, I do work with them also. That's besides the point. But that Gemara doesn't apply to me. So I'm not public. So Mitch goes to visit by the Cones, you know, and then he sees me. So Shkoyach, you know, because the two houses down. Okay, it's one time it happens. I once had a mice. He's remembered the mice with the Mishulach. I started with the Mishulach.
You on the roof?
Yeah.
Try it again. I'd like to hear.
Okay, so that's so I was working on the roof. I was actually, there was mildew on the roof, and I had one of these pumper things. You fill it up. You make a mixture. It's up on the roof doing work. Car pulls up. This is in the days where we're still getting Mishulachim. Out walked two young, fellows in their 40s wearing kapatas. The guys are Russian Kollel Meretz Yisrael. They're coming fundraising. So the driver, somebody that this driver specifically, before he stops, he tells the people he's driving who they're meeting. So when they come to the house, he tells them they're meeting the Rosh Karla. I'm up on the roof. I'm not coming down. Right? You know, my wife was in the house. I'm like, I'm not going to, you know, it's not a gay to have the whole conversation. They didn't notice me. They were focused on going to the house. They didn't know, didn't say anything. If they did, they don't know what I look like. They don't know who. My brother has a story. When he was a rabbi in Birmingham, so one time he's washing his car. He's wearing,
car washing clothes,
swimming pants, and a t-shirt.
Car washing.
And a person pulls up. He wants to speak to the rabbi. He says, "I'll go get him." He goes inside. You know, gets dressed. You know. The guy is connected to, like, he doesn't know what the rabbi looks like, you know. So I'll go get him, you know. So like, so I'm not, you know, they don't know who I am. So everything is fine with oil, etc. Meanwhile, the driver, this is a big smarty guy, Moshe Ben Levi. And we're good friends. So he sees me on the roof. So he decides to call out to me. He doesn't just call out, because he's, you know, this is the way he is. He calls out with this real loud voice. Kibbutz Arav, Ma'alin Bagodesh, Ma'alin Bagodesh. He screams this out. So they look around, they look up. They see me up there dressed like this, and it just doesn't compute. I can see the thought process. Says, he's Rosh Karla on the roof. It just doesn't work. Matos Hashama. So how in the world am I supposed to explain to them what I'm doing? I started my first sentence. I said, stop, Rangel. It ain't the game. I'm not going to explain it to them. I'm not going to explain what I'm doing. They have no idea. They're not doing this type of stuff in their house. And why I'm doing it, and I don't have a worker doing it. It's just like the whole thing is like totally not in their universe. They said, my wife's down, my wife is in the house. She'll take care of you. And that was it.
Now, why were you up there on the roof?
Melter.
I was taking a melter.
I know, and that wasn't a worker.
No, I mean, like, you know, I do my own gutters. I go up on the roof, you know, like, you know. But I make my, Mitch saw me when I was putting up, I have a shlock for my sukkah, so I have to go on the roof to set it up. Like, you know. When we first moved here, just like, you know, we had the gutter problem. So I hired a chimney sweep to do it for me. He charged me $60 for 15 minutes. Right. Said, I'm not doing this again. I went and bought out a ladder for $50. The same ladder I had I had to replace the rope, the extension ladder. I replaced the rope for the extension ladder. I was replacing the rope, you know. And I've had the same ladder for 20, I'm here now from that.
Almost, way ahead of the game.
I'm here 27, almost 27 years. The ladder is 26 years old for $60. It's much cheaper than the, you know, than the worker. So that's how it started. Never been on a roof before in my life. What? So I got somebody who does train me to show me how safely you get on, safely get off the roof, from the ladder to the roof. That's the scariest part. Right. Yeah. And once I did that, I got used to it. You should also walk around carefully while you're up there.
Yeah.
Don't dance.
Yeah. Don't like. Yeah. Don't. No dancing on the roof. Yeah. Fiddling on the roof. Okay.
That was very good.
What?
That was very good.
Well, Shlomo Katz went to Purim one year. He went up on his roof, and he was with his violin. He was fiddling on the roof. That was his Purim shtick. Okay, so it's a you have to move to the norms of your community, and you live in a community where like it's totally like out of character for a person of stature to do that. It wouldn't necessarily be appropriate to do. Over here, you know, Silverstein is much more loose in that regard. You know, like, you know, COVID issues, etc. They don't give cover to the rabbis. So I'm not, you know, I'm not worried about that, you know, being I said to somebody, he says, I told him not to ride a bike, though. One of you members of the car told him not to ride a bike in public.
You told members of the car not to?
Not to. He said, Rabbi, he said, listen, anybody in the community who knows me has respect for me as whoever I am. I'm not diminishing my respect. There's zero diminishing my respect by the fact that I ride a bike. A person who's, I believe, is of stature, is a young man, but they don't, people don't really understand that. You need to carry yourself in a way that people will start to notice that you're somebody of stature, because they need to respect you. Like, I thought it was the weirdest thing when I first said it. Like, think about it. It started making sense. Again, no one respects me because I wear a suit. That's not my respect is not based on my suit. But a person who's of lesser known to the community, they're, if they dress in a certain way, they're going to get more respect. If they dress another way, they're not going to get less respect. That's the reality. So they need to dress in a way which is appropriate to who they are, because the community needs to learn to respect this person. So you have to think it through, you know. I'm not starting out with psychedelic shirts and, you know, jeans tomorrow, but, you know. Okay. I wanted to do the piece of Hirsch. So it's a long piece. So maybe I'm just going to do it outside. That. So he talks about so go to page 172, first three. I guess that's a good place to start. So there's a mitzvah to put a fire on the mizbeach, and he talks about the idea of the night, connection to the night to the day. That's a beautiful piece. We're not going to do that. But before the fire of the new day was laid and lit, the ritual of a Trumas Hadesh and the lifting up ordered in this verse had to be performed. Is that the Trumas Hadesh does not belong to the preparation of the altar for the service of the new day just beginning? That's the dinner. The tzoras desha makes room for the new thing. Trumas Hadesh does not make any room for anything. So what's it for? It's not preparation for the new avodah. So what is it? Trumas Hadesh is rather to be considered as the final conclusion of the service of the preceding day. So Trumas Hadesh is It's the last step of the previous day. So it's an avoda. It'll only be done by kohen kosher and complete priestly vestments. So the Torah describes the act of taking the mincha, taking part of the mincha, putting the mizbeach, is called v'herim. Uses the word v'herim over here as well, lifting up. The pasuk says, "V'someitz lo mizbeach." Skip a few lines down. Lay it down. Deliberately to be left completely there and not scattered. The more darshan is v'somoy, he has v'somoy v'na, he has to put his middle gently. V'somoy kula, he can't drop any of the ash. Like, we're throwing ash.
Right, that's right.
He has to put, v'somoy shal yifas, he put it down gently enough that it's not going to spread. It's not going to fly out away. He has to put it, keep it, this little piece over there, as intact as possible. And that's the mitzvah. And it's put next to the mizbeach. So Joseph the Kaimitz, the mincha, serves as an anskara for the hall. The Kaimitz, the handful which of the mincha goes on the mizbeach, and the rest is given to the kohen to eat. And the handful is called the askara. It's the memorial part which is given to God. So this Kaimitz of Trumas Dasher, and actually the Morris says the shear is the Kaimitz, having laid down as a remembrance of the devotion represented by the sacrifice of the past day to God, to his holy Torah, etc. Now, it would give an idea as the introduction to the service of the day the following. Today brings no new mission. It is only to carry out ever afresh the mission that yesterday too was to accomplish. Truman Sedation connects today to yesterday. It's a brand new day, brand new avodah. You know what? It's a brand new day. It's the exact same avodah as yesterday. Not in the negative sense of, you know, just like it's more, you know, it loses its excitement. The avodah of the kiddush of avodah of the Torah is we're not looking for new ways to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're good with old ways. The challenge is to do those old ways with a freshness all the time. And this is day after day after day. So that's what rehearsed season in the concept of Trumas Hadeshim. It's fascinating. He points out, I'm not going to read it inside, the Morris said there's a concept in Halacha, anything we designated for Kodesh Baruch Hu, the person appropriates for themselves wherever they serve Me'ilah. Something which is designated to be a korban for Hashem, and the person takes it for themselves, there's din of Me'ilah. Me'ilah, when does the halacha of Me'ilah end? It ends when the process of the korban is finished. Once the mitzvah has been completed, a person will take it for themselves, not over the issur of Me'ilah. The one exception is Trumas Hadeshim. Trumas Hadeshim remains kadosh forever. The Trumas Hadeshim remains kadosh even after the prescribed mitzvah of depositing has been carried out, and using any of these ashes as the Me'ilah, and that's going to be true forever. So he takes that. So it means in the deeper meaning, the purpose of this lifting out of the ashes is not completed with just depositing it. If it's seen as being remnants of the past for all the future, it's a never-ending kedusha. Always, you have to always remind yourself of the past is the model for the future. This is such a yekka talking, you know. Like it's exactly the same way every time. But it's a challenge. So how do you make something which is exactly the same every time? How do you make it fresh? So, to some extent, I think the analogy which you can use is marriage. Let's say, you know, regards to tefillah. Husbands have been saying to their wives for years and years of the marriage, "I love you." There's not so many other words you can say. And the wife says, "You know, that's so boring. I can't hear it again." And the husband says, "Oh my gosh, this is such a boring thing to say." He says it with the same intensity, the same passion, hopefully, or more than when he started, right? The marriage at some point in life, it's not this exciting excitement that, you know, they're going, you know, occasionally, but basically it's living life day to day. It's basically the same, etc. But the relationship continues to deepen and grow, even though it's very basic. It's repetitious. So it's not that we are unable to put feeling, passion, and freshness into something which is repetitious. We do it all the time. But so if a person would, in their Avodas Hashem, would feel it as a true relationship, so every day, our model husbands, okay, they're not all model husbands, maybe they don't exist, I don't know, but that's right, right? The husband gets up in the morning and he sets the table for his wife for breakfast. Right? He does the same thing every day. But every day he feels it's a feeling of care for his wife and he wants to do that. And he feels good about that because the relationship is strong enough to him and real enough to him that having an opportunity to express the relationship is meaningful to him. It's not meaningful one time. I once said, you know, obviously it's tongue-in-cheek, there's a concept in halacha called chazaka. So once something is established, it remains the reality till it changes. So the husband says to the wife, listen, I want you to know that I love you. Chazaka says that's the facts. I don't have to keep repeating myself. From now on, you should know, that's the fact, I love you. You don't have to repeat myself. Right? Real Yeshiva Shalamdin, right? It doesn't work, right? Yeah. That's not the relationship.
Bad start.
Quick end. So we're starting with a relationship, and the relationship grows. You poor guys have heard this line from me multiple times, but tough luck if they hear it again. I was once standing in the lobby over here, in the large lobby of our yeshiva, and a young man walked in. Shalom aleichem. Started talking. I asked him, so he's married. I asked him how long you're married. He says he's in his fifth year of Shana Rishana. So I said, some of them were like standing by, and they were curious how I was going to react to that. One of them said, Rabbi, I knew you were going to say something. So I said Nebuch. So he said, why Nebuch? He says, I don't know about me. I have to tell you, Shana Rishana was very nice, but Shana Shniyah was better than Shana Rishana. And Shana Shlishis was better than Shana Shniyah. And why would I want to live to 5 years of Shana Rishana? Shana Rishana is a very challenging time. It's a time of learning to get to interface with another person. You have different interests, different natures, everything. 24/7, 365, you're on the same roof. Getting learning, it's a process. And the process gets better and better as you grow along. It gets deeper and deeper. Why do you want to keep reading yourself? So in the secular thought process, the apex of the marriage is the honeymoon, and the goal in life is to get back to the second honeymoon. So we don't have that. Shana Rishana is the year of establishing a relationship because it's challenging, and hopefully by the second year it's better. And it keeps growing. So our relationship should be the same thing. You don't need to bring different karbanas. It's much more exciting, you know, something new. No, it's the same karbanas, same karman talmid. The mitzvah's talmid. Talmid in the morning, talmid in the afternoon, Trum Sedeshin, talmid in the morning, talmid in the afternoon. So how are you going to grow with that? Well, the answer is, if you're the same way in your marriage, your appreciation, whether we grow from day to day is very challenging, right? But hopefully from month to month or from year to year or from decade to decade, right, the relationship deepens. So, same thing with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So, the opportunity to express my love for Kodesh Baruch Hu and my appreciation for Kodesh Baruch Hu by bringing the Korban today is just as real and just as present as my appreciation for that yesterday. So, the first point is that there's this thought process out there that the way you have freshness in your avoda is by doing something different. And the message of possession is no. It's going to be the same thing. You're going to hold on to the past. That's where the strength of relationship is. The things which are reliable, You definitely hear the Yiddishkeit in him, right? The things that are reliable, and you know that they're there. That's where the marriage is. The marriage is the wife knows that the husband's going to take care of her. She can rely on him to do that day in and day out. That's when she feels secure in the relationship. Relationship is real. There's a real commitment. So the repetition of the same thing is a symbolism of the real commitment that Klai Yisrael has to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It has to be fresh. That's the one you have to work on. Someone went to Master Volba and says, how in the world do you say the same words of the tefillah again and again and again? It's like so challenging. Well, we have an answer, which I have to tell you, like, I read the answer that he responded. I have no way to personally understand what he's saying. I can sort of, picture what he, you know, but I have no way to pull it into my own reality. He said, a person grows in the Baruch Hashem from Shacharis to Mincha. So the Mincha Shemoneh Esrei is different than the Shacharis by definition. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the words mean. I mean, I know what the words mean, but he was so aware of his growth. By the time he got to Mincha, he was a different person than he was by Shacharis. I'm like, okay, But we can relate to that over a period of years.
Yeah.
Like, a person doesn't daven in the same way when they're 50 as when they're 40. Right. They have 10 more years of life experience. They have had more challenges. They've had more trauma. They've had more growth opportunities. They've had more chesed. And their appreciation of life and whatever it is different than it was 10 years before. And they express that in the Shemoneh Esrei. It's different than it was a few years ago. So it's not like it's a foreign concept. The idea from day to day that Rebbe was talking about, I have no way to understand that. That's like way beyond where I live. But the idea is not foreign to us. The I love you chasna, there's this head table, they have the young married couple, the newlyweds, and you have the Alta Zayda and Alta Baba sitting there. Right? They're married 60 years. Right? And they're, you know, they dance a little bit, they come back to sit next to each other, and they're just enjoying the moment. And the chazan kala comes to sit down next to them. The chazan says to the kala, I love you. And the zayda says to the baba, he says, I love you. It's not the same, I love you. This is I love you of 60 years of living through life together, of bringing children to the chuppah, grandchildren to the chuppah. It's a whole different world. It's a different I love you. So, this... The society's thought process that the only way it's going to be geschmack if it's new. Now, it's not, Chazal recognized that. Rashi says it in Chumash. It shouldn't be to you like, you know, when they make the king with the proclamation on the town square, everyone wants to see it. Right? Next day, it's old news already. So Rashi says, it shouldn't be like a Diyutah Yeshana that nobody wants to read. It should be like a Diyutah Chadasha that everyone's co-writes Rotzim L'Sofna. Everyone wants to go and absorb what it says. So Torah is telling me that the Torah should be like that new thing. Now, I mean, I understand what this... maybe this is just me. Dave and I were talking last night that, you know, I had this crazy thing about reading books. I like reading books. That's the first crazy thing. That's not within my point. Right? I loved rereading books. Because I knew that I enjoyed them. Something new, I'm not sure if I enjoy it or not. Something, oh, I know I enjoy it. So I would reread these stories. Like, I know that what's going to happen because I read it before. Like, I once... In high school, I gave a speech bringing different proofs from Sherlock Holmes, whether he was a person who was an ascetic and was not into food, or he was very into food. I had stiras at different places. That's my level of reading Sherlock Holmes. I'm a sugar, like, you know, okay, so far we came from. to have his head examined. Anyway, not normal.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed reading it again and again and again. I know the story. It was familiar. It was interesting. I didn't need fresh and new. Something fresh. I don't know if it's going to be good or not. I was never the guy like try new foods. Try new foods.
No.
That's not me. You know, like. I have my diet limitations. I have very little, you know, foods I can eat. My lunch is tuna fish. Tuna fish with dates, tuna fish with an apple, whatever it is. That's my lunch 6 days a week for the last 50 years. I'm a sugar. Okay, I'm asking. All right. So this thing about freshness and newness, like, it doesn't really, really talk to me. So I'm not the right guy to talk about it. But there is at least one person that I know who's apparently has not bought into that it has to be fresh and new to be exciting, be interesting. So that's what Hirsch is. I think that Hirsch is saying it's to find meaning. To find value in. Carry out ever afresh the mission that yesterday what two was to accomplish. Today brings no new mission. It's just the same one. That's his first piece. The second piece is the idea of Tzadashin is don't get too stuck in the past. There's a lot of Deshin over there. Get it out of the way. Sometimes it's gonna stop you from growing. Getting stuck in the past. That's his next piece. So the Torah gave both mitzvahs. There's on the day-to-day basis, you're building on the past, but over a period of time, it builds up. You have to stop and think, is the past wearing me down, holding me back? I'll just give you one point on that. Maybe we'll have it until we're getting late. Rav Hirsch says, what's the idea behind a Torah's Nadorim? Says, what are Nadorim? Nadorim are, we basically were given the person who felt in some way that they needed to protect themselves against something that they were drawn toward, but they shouldn't be drawn towards, or they wanted to grow in a certain way. They made a neder to force themselves. Okay, so you grew. If you don't let go of it, it's a straitjacket eventually. It's not the growth that you need right now. The growth that you needed when you were 21 years old to take you to 22 is not the same thing you need when you're 31 to take you to 32. And if you're stuck with those same Nadorim, you're stuck. The Torah says, no, they were great for the time being, and now the time to move on. There's a concept of the Torah's Nadorim. He sees the Torah's Nadorim, this idea that sometimes the past, holding on to the same patterns, etc., can become something which is detrimental. And you get too stuck in the past. And it's time to approach something differently, or to approach a different area, or to grow. So we have the Truma Sadesh on one side. That's on the day-to-day basis. We base ourselves on the past. We have a basic picture. As life moves along, the Truma Sadesh, which is occasionally, it's time to let go of that, some of that stuff, and move on to try something different. Okay.
Scott, well, thank you.
The first